One of them wanted to be the security guy. He claimed he was a security guy.
Jarvis.
Hey.
I'm back from Vegas.
Did you win some money?
I did win some money. I won like $300 or $400 on penny slot machines. Wasn't too bad. But I was there for Black Hat 2016. Are you aware of what Black Hat is?
Not really. What is
Black Hat? All right, so Black Hat is a term for a bad guy, right? Or a bad hacker in the hacking business. There's a black hat and a white hat. White hat's the good guy. We got to work on that, by the way. That's problematic. But anyway, that's what it is right now. So and these companies deal primarily with cybersecurity and hacking and these kind of things. And it's a huge convention, and it costs a few bucks to get into it, and there's a lot of training that goes into it. And then we have traditional companies on the floor, right? Well, this year, I decided I can get more companies if I just stay in the press room. Mm. So I went to the press room. There's a backdrop there, and I just put out my Calendly invite and said, hey, if you guys want to do an interview, come on down. 43 shows. 9 hours of interviews. 9 hours. So what we're going to do over the next 4 or 5 weeks before I prepare for is we're going to play these Black Hat interviews. And just I'll just come in every week and do a little intro on them and say, hey, you know, here's four shows. Here's what we're going to talk about. And I want everybody to get ready for as-is. That's September 12th through the 15th in Orlando. We're going to do the same thing. We have a booth at as-is. I forgot the number, but I'll get it for you next week. And we're going to set up like short little interviews. And we're going live. Did I tell you about this?
No.
Okay, so I signed up with livestream.com, and I bought this live streaming equipment. It's a little box. You know, it's about as big as a briefcase, but it's actually a computer. And I put this new Sony camera. Look at my little Sony. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it is cool.
Sony.
I love it.
That's an ENG. Electric nice. News Gathering. That's what they call it, right? Mm. And we plug this into the live stream box, and as long as I have an internet signal, boom, I'm on the web live. And we're going to do it from the floor of As Is, and I'm hoping to do over 100 shows. I think we can pull it off in about 3 or 4 days.
Wow.
So look for information on securityguardradio.com or send me an email if you want to sign up. My past vendors that were at As Is, I think you guys will get a kick out of that. And then while it's live, you can actually tweet it to your Twitter feed. We're going to put it on Facebook, Twitter, and the Security Guard Radio homepage. And then if you're one of the people that I'm interviewing, you can actually send that out live too and say, hey, I'm live at the show.
Right.
So we're looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of work, but it's going to be a lot of fun. So I've gone all in. It's go big or go home, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
buying all this equipment, we're going to do it. So today, let's get into it. So what's Black Hat? Black Hat is the convention of people concerned with cybersecurity, hacking, that kind of thing. And I got to tell you, these are some of the smartest people in the world that I interviewed.
I'm sure.
I mean, way over my head, but Security Guy Radio uses reptilian brain to boil it down to some easy concepts everybody can remember, okay? So we're going to talk today. I'm going to play four interviews that we did on the floor at Black Hat. Two are from Nuix, Nuix.com. One is from InfoArmor.com, and the last one is from Savius. Now these are four. I got 40 more to go, but this is the first four. So Nuix is a neat company. They're a bunch of cops, like ex-bobbies and investigators and military people, and they took the investigative part of cybersecurity and started creating data that we can use to do investigations to catch these guys. Before, it was just kind of a giant clump of data. Mm-hmm. They take it and they analyze it. InfoArmor protects data in transit, financial information, things like that. And then Savius is kind of neat. Savius is in 60 countries and 6,000 customers.
Wow.
It's like all over the web. And they do the same thing. They catch packets going through the internet, right? And try to identify it as malicious or good. So it sounds a little boring, but it's not, all right? So for all the people that don't understand how computers work or they're still on Windows 3.0 or something with your DOS drive, don't worry about it. You're going to find this stuff interesting. So we'll go to tape, and we're going to show these shows, Jarvis, and we'll see you next week on Security Guard Radio. And don't forget about As Is 2016 in Orlando, Florida. We'll be there on the floor at their own booth. We'll give information about that next week. So we'll see you next week on Security Guy Radio. Well, don't go. I mean, stay here. We're going to play these four interviews. But I will see you next week on Security Guy Radio. Thanks. All right, here we go.
Okay.
So, welcome to Security Guy Radio, Black Hat USA 2016. What's your name, sir?
Thank you, Chuck. My name is Jim Kent.
And what's the name of your company?
My company is Nuix.
Now, what does Nuix do exactly?
Nuix it's an organization that is together that really is about protecting and enable the digital world we live in for our families. So we come from a very deep heritage of investigative software and technologies, really getting clarity and getting depth of data so that we can tell a story. You know, you can't fight that enemy you cannot see.
Right.
We allow you to see it.
So you have a very interesting law enforcement background like myself. Tell me about that.
A former detective, a high-tech crime unit detective.
Scotland Yard?
Years, if only.
Oh,
no,
oh.
No delusions of grandeur there.
Okay.
So I was in a force out in the east of the UK, Suffolk Constabulary, a bit more sleepy because bringing up children, as
right.
you do as a detective, you don't want to sort of raise them where you came from. So out there, back in the 90s, grew the high-tech crime units when the boom happened. Then, as it evolved, I decided to come forward and actually do a lot of work with the National High-Tech Crime Unit, now the National Crime Agencies. Was involved with lots of those. And also, as I left, I opened up a company in the UK where we wrote the actual government guidelines on forensic investigations.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I've interviewed several people from the UK and my radio partner is from there. He was Scotland Yard, Bobby, and all that stuff. Yeah. And England has a much different approach. They focus on people's safety and security, and it's really more about integrating those things, and there's national policies. The United States is fortification. We're tough,
indeed.
Fortified, we're going to keep you out.
Yeah.
Little different model. What do you think is the number one threat to our national security and safety?
So for me today, as I think the elephant in the room about the insider threat has been, it's really coming to its own. Insider threat has always been and still will remain to be the biggest threat.
That's what I say, right? And back in the day, nobody really thought that. They always
yep.
thought fortification were keeping somebody out. And I always thought, no.
Correct.
I got to worry about the guy inside. And now people, I'm glad to hear people are more focused on that.
And coming from the side we talk about security, everybody has focused for many years on keeping people out, as you say, the fortified
right.
approach. You know, bounce them away. I've got the latest antivirus. I've got the latest, whatever it might be, to stop people getting in. We know people are getting in. But understanding what is going on in your network and your environment, understanding the depth of your risk through the investigation, the response process, is going to make the difference. You get that clarity and control over your data to start making the right informed decisions.
And there's billions and billions of attacks on networks now, you know, in a day, right? And I was talking to Carl Herberger, Radware, smart guys, everybody yep. knows him in the industry, right? And he said, the problem is you might be under attack and not know it for a week. So what does Nuix do to help some of these challenges? Explain the process and what you do to contribute to the
yeah,
protection.
That's fantastic. So going back to the day, I remember myself and actually Kevin Mandy, I stood on a stage to Visa and MasterCard to become instant response companies, one of only six in the world back in 2005 and 2006.
Oh, that was early, yeah.
So we were out there. So absolutely, like you, I was there with very, very large data breaches. People would throw a door open of a warehouse and say, we've been attacked.
Right.
What now? You know, so learning and understanding, and that's where Nuix has grown. It understands really monitoring, working out what's going on in your environment, whether it's a 300,000 known environment, whether it's putting up deception, whether it's seeing what people are putting in USBs, whether it's deflecting, whether it's responding, whether it's mediating, all the way down to being able to recover a deleted file off a mail server through the investigative visual approach we have to investigations. It's taking the old school digital forensic investigations and making it accessible to the outside
right,
world.
And you have an investigative background, so you get
very
that.
Much.
Which is very interesting. Cops don't usually transition into that world. They should, right?
Well,
because they have the investigative
they have the
background.
Education.
Right. And when I was back at the studios, I worked closely with IT. And what IT used to tell me is, look, just tell me what button to push. Because I don't understand the people part. I don't understand what a bad guy is. I can code something. But you help me with catching the guy, participating behavior.
Correct.
So I assume that's what part of your role is because you got a cop background. You kind
Absolutely.
Of get that part. So IT and physical security have to work together on this stuff. Absolutely.
100%. It's a correlation of effort.
Right.
And when you look today with what Nuix does really well, it puts its hands around data. It absorbs it, ingests it, normalizes it, and allows you to do what you want.
Normalizes it's good work because if it's too many ones and zeros, the investigator guy won't get it.
And the key bit that what I've tried to bring forward within Nuix, and we've really as a whole team pushed it, is how do I take ones and zeros of data and turn it into information that's relevant to the person sat in front of the screen. That process sounds simple, but that is where the years of investigative ability, that is where our insider threat teams, our cyber threat analysis teams are watching the data on the conveyor belt after it's been normalized and go, that's interesting.
Well, no, that's
I'm going to draw that out and I'm going to put that prefetch file to that link file. So by the time it hits the screen, that work's already done. It's as if you're sat there with Nuix in front of you and you've got five or six other subject matter experts in the background already got your back before it's even hit your screen.
I like that conveyor belt visual.
That's
really
is
interesting.
The way,
who's the end user at the lowest level that can understand that data? Would it be a guard?
Absolutely. So I actually have an 11-year-old son who is heavily into Minecraft who plays. My whole objective here is being able to take what we do with great complexity and allowing him to understand that things are going wrong.
Well, that's
through visuals, through colors.
Right.
But knowing that if you want to right click or drill into that, I can get to the ones and zeros.
Right.
So the forensic depth and integrity is still there.
I need the ones and zeros to prove
correct
the probable cause in the investigation, if you go criminal or even civil. I mean, you need that data. But to react and respond, you need the first responder guy who can take it and do something with it.
You gotcha. And that's the only way you start being proactive.
Right.
You start getting user behaviors. You start making baselines because you start understanding. And that's what Nuix does very well. And, okay, so I've worked out that someone's run off with a USB. I've done a forensic investigation of their hard drive. Now I want to know on this 300,000 node network, where else has that USB been? When did that person door swipe? It's about correlating people, objects, locations, and events into the entire environment to tell a story about an event.
Now, when you say real time,
yep.
Define that for me.
Well,
common term or
yes, common term,
mostly real time?
It's,
or what?
It's mostly real time.
Okay,
there's
right.
always a transition
sure.
of data. It's not immediate.
But it's not a day.
Oh, no. Okay. It's seconds.
Because a day would be great for some systems, actually.
And it depends on the size.
Yeah. Right.
And it depends on what you're doing. If you're asking it to do very complex things before it alerts and make a lot of decisions towards the end point, which is happening, then the alerts will become, when they come through, but there will be more relevant alerts rather than, I could give you millions of, a lot of noise, just hitting you continuously. Where's the benefit in that?
Now,
it's instant noise.
Yeah.
But it's not, it's not a harmonious tune of noise that's coming to you that's actually relevant to you.
Is there machine learning in here, or artificial intelligence, or is it a little different than that?
A little different from that.
Okay.
At the moment, it's baseline. Of course, what we have is an ability to show you all this data. Very enriched data. The next logical step is putting machine learning, artificial intelligence across it, and making it learn. Because it's not going incident, case. It's going across all the cases that have been down into your cases, across and correlating to other cases diagonally, and starting to say, okay, the next steps are, or if you put some proactive measures in here, there's a good likelihood you're going to stop that thing happening. Because we've learned this is happening.
Right.
So that's why it makes a difference. But it does it all in a very nice, visual, approachable analyst mentality, rather than having to be black screen, green typing, and think that you're a super duper scripting guru.
So,
because
usually the IT guys are the guys that responded, which is problematic if they don't have a sense of urgency.
Yes.
And what's urgent to an IT guy might not be urgent to a physical security guy. And the studios back in the day when I worked there used to hire ex-cops because they understood the people piece and all that kind of thing, right? And then they migrated and said, no, we got to hire an IT guy who will handle IT and physical. Right. I think they're going back, not just studios, but other places are saying, you know what? I need a CISO and a CSO, and those two got to work because they're different disciplines.
Exactly.
And very few people can do both. Very few.
Correct.
Yeah.
There's the disciplines are so comparable yet almost opposing in some stages that they've got to be together.
Right.
Working together.
Well, and, IT is, this is secret scroll password stuff. And police guys are kind of like, well, that's confidential. And and you really got to work together on it.
Yeah.
So would Nuix be considered a really, really good relational database? Is that another way to look at it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But to forensic depth.
At
a very layman's term.
Yeah, very layman.
That's fine.
I got to explain it to my nieces and nephews who don't get it.
And that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
And I think the conveyor belt way is a great way of doing
it. Oh, absolutely.
All of the data that comes in the bucket, we will make sense of that for you. We'll draw the bits that are relevant. So if I come in, what 10 questions would I always want to ask of a USB drive, of an email, of a bit of code? All of those questions have already been.
What 10 questions would you want to ask of a USB drive or flash? That's interesting.
Correct.
So I put it in computer A, and you see that on the network. And then that same flash drive starts winding up in five different computers.
Correct.
You guys know that. That's brilliant. As the British say, brilliant.
It's marvelous.
Marvelous.
So, but it's relevant.
Yeah,
the
relevant,
thing is,
right.
We're asking questions of data that is actually relevant to you as an end user. And that's the approach that's very different. It's not just, here's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Have all this stuff. Aren't we brilliant? Here's stuff. No. It's, we have a lot of information as we've correlated, we've put together. These are the questions that ordinarily you would ask, and they're being answered already. However, go ahead and ask what other questions you want.
And you can configure that to the end user so he knows, or, well, actually, the end user can say, listen, Jim, I only want this stuff right here.
Yep.
He sets up a filter. You set up a filter for him, right?
Absolutely.
Now,
logic.
How do you price this stuff? You have to give me quotes, but I mean, is it modular? Is it per user? How is it?
So the way it spans out, we're addressing two markets, really.
Yep.
One being a very, very innovative, adaptive security marketplace. The other being a very forensically enriched base, sort of visualization capability of some of the other
two products within one, kind of.
But the key bit is it's all Nuix,
right?
Rather than other organizations that are a bit of this and L
sure.
bolt on some of it. It's one company, and it's been designed from the ground up to be one thing. So that makes it very unique. So pricing that is very different because we're addressing different markets.
Okay.
So at the moment, it's a bit premature to talk about how much this thing is going to be. But clearly, all of the above
well,
are being
much,
evaluated.
Well, not how much, but it's modular,
yeah,
so to speak,
absolutely.
Because you have two modules. Okay.
And it's completely, and it's evaluated because you're absolutely right. There will be times where people want it by a user base. There'll be times where people want it by a node base pricing.
Right.
There'll be times where they want the entire thing pricing. So all of those, we're working with certain customers and seeing how that works with them, what's relevant, how the framework could actually be put together so that everybody can benefit from it. You don't have to be a multi-gazillion dollar organization.
Right, exactly.
Because actually, you know, someone in the middle of the chain could benefit from this.
Well, that's
so they
important.
Don't get compromised.
I mean,
through.
We know about bring your own device and how 85% exactly. of breaches are from your private cell phone, because when I go home, I don't really care about all that password stuff, right?
Yep.
And those are medium-sized companies, and they can't afford $100 million like
exactly.
Cisco can, right?
Exactly.
So it's good that a product like this is getting into a user market that really may stop a lot of the breaches. Because the big boys have their plugs in place, right? Interesting.
Yeah.
Jim, been fascinating.
It's been great.
Give
thank
us your
you
website.
Thank you. It's Nuix.com.
All right.
Very simple. Everything's there. It's some very compelling stories and videos.
Oh, great.
About where we've come from and where we're going.
All right, Nuix.com. Thanks for coming on Security Guy Radio.
Perfect. Thank
Appreciate
you so
it.
Much.
Beautiful. Welcome to Security Guy Radio, Black Hat 2016 Las Vegas. What's your name, sir?
My name is Eddie Sheehy. Chuck, it's great to be here.
And what's the name of your company?
I run a company called Nuix.
And you're the CEO?
I'm the CEO. I have been for the last 10 years.
Oh,
I had
10
my
years.
10th anniversary just a couple of months ago.
Now, I noticed your Irish accent. Is it an Irish company?
It's not an Irish company. It's actually an Australian company
oh,
run by an Irishman.
Okay.
And we have 60% of our business here in the U.S.
Oh, 60%. That's interesting.
We have about 220 people living here,
right?
Working here. We've got about 80 in Europe and the rest in Australia.
Now, what do you think is the biggest security concern we face as a society, you know, nationally, personally? What worries you the most?
Putting it on one thing is difficult.
Okay. Well, that in itself is one thing. Multiple things, right?
I mean, it is. To me, the bit that scares me most would be when the virtual world starts to impact the physical world.
Good point.
If I was going to put it down to one thing, I don't like the fact that a lot of SCADA systems are connected to the internet. I think that level of connectivity is open to abuse.
Now, that's interesting you should say that. So I had my first computer in 1984. It was two floppy drives. Remember the old floppies?
I do.
And I could program it so it would count from 1 to 1,000,000 in like 20 minutes. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. And I used to take it to the police station, write reports. And my police department thought it was crazy, you know.
Oh, I remember those times.
Yeah. And nobody understood or had use for it in that world. And
you
back
must have
then,
set up their high-tech crime lab.
Well, they didn't get it. They still don't get it, most of them, right? But back in the day, we had the HSM, Hierarchy Storage Management, all terminals were dumb. You could, if you took the terminal home, it didn't have any data on it. And it went up to a room that was secured, and that was now the cloud. So I get it. It worries me a little bit that everything's connected. It's convenient, but then everything's connected, and kaboom, it could all go down, you know, if you do it that way. So you're with Nuix.com, right?
Nuix.com.
And tell me what they do to contribute to making this a safer place. Let's talk about your vision for for the company.
Okay. So Nuix started off actually 16 years ago, before I turned up.
All right.
And our core technology has always been to understand unstructured information, and we move that into semi-structured, which for us is log files, and structured, which is databases. So we can analyze virtually any volume of data, and it can start off with hard drives, mobile phones, email systems, log files, databases, and correlate information across all of those different data sources. If you think of an average crime committed by two or three people, there's probably 15 or 20 different data sources
sure.
within that.
Yeah, yeah.
And nowadays, a lot of those crimes actually involve cyber. You know, they're putting on a virus into a network, or they're accessing information that they're not supposed to be inside a threat, I suppose, is a way. And what we've been doing over all these years is reverse engineering all those file types so that we can correlate not just the metadata, but also the text and the embedded information inside it.
So it's interesting you say log file. Bring your mic up just a little bit closer from there.
Sorry.
So a log file was considered unstructured. Interesting.
Well, everybody has their own definition.
Yeah.
For us,
it's just a lot of raw data.
It's really a lot of raw data. Yeah. It's usually in a text form. But it's unstructured to us would be, here's an Exchange database that has huge amounts of user accounts inside it. And each one of those will have folders inside it. Each one of those folders will have emails. So some of those emails will have attachments. Some of those attachments will have embedded attachments. To us, that's unstructured. A log file is just what we call semi-structured.
Semi-structured, okay.
Semi-structured, because there is a structure to it.
Yeah.
And we just have to parse it out.
So Nuix is not artificial intelligence and machine learning. It's really a super-duper relational database that digs, puts it in a structure, and creates, how would I describe it? Gives you an answer for what it means.
Exactly.
That how to describe it?
Right. We bring those correlations and facts up to the investigator.
Right.
And it could be, I want to see everything that has numbers in it. It could be credit card numbers. It could be locations, IP addresses, email addresses, web environments. And depending on what you're actually trying to achieve, we funnel that up to the top, and we allow you to pick, well, that's the information I want to look at, and that could be the six documents that you want to look at out of a million.
Now, you started this 16 years ago. That's quite a vision 16 years ago. Not many people were thinking about that 16 years ago.
I would say that the guys who started us off, they had a broad vision, and they stumbled into it slowly but surely in the next couple of years.
Right.
So absolutely, they wanted to create a really fast processing engine. They wanted to be able to understand the content and context of email at the time. That was the holy grail. If you go back.
That's right. I remember we had companies that came in, and maybe it was your company. It's possible at Fox, where they called them email management systems because I got all these emails on Microsoft and I can't make eye or hair of them. And these systems allowed us to dig into that. That's very interesting. Makes a lot of sense.
That's exactly where we came from.
But, yeah.
And as the years rolled on, we needed to correlate information from emails to log files.
Right.
And then from log files to structured databases. Because you know there could be information inside that structured database that relates to that log file, which gives you context to why that person wrote or said that thing in that email at that time,
right,
or put it on social media, or whatever he did. So our job in the last couple of years has actually changed much more into telling stories.
Very good way to put it.
You know, what happened 5 minutes before, 5 minutes after a certain thing happened?
Well, to an investigator, that's relevant. It's highly relevant. Where to an IT guy, it may not be relevant. They have a different function.
Absolutely.
Right? They're looking for the one thing that they need to do to turn the file off, put a password on it, whatever. And I don't mean to downplay their knowledge. It's just a different discipline. So you guys work with an investigator mentality and merge in the IT part of it.
So let me give you an example. You have a USB stick.
Right.
We take a look at it. And, there's going to be a lot of different questions you might have about that USB stick. First off, you know, what content does it have? Where have I seen it on the network before? Okay. Just by searching the log files and information that we've already processed, we can show you that it's been seen in four different computers over the last month.
Oh, interesting. That's a thief right there, possibly. That's interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you can see who's logged on the computer at that time. Is it the same person in multiple different places? You know, what information was downloaded 2 minutes before that time when the USB stick was plugged in? How can you link that information to that user, you know, looking at the log files, accessing that floor at that time, or what information was sent to the printer. You know, by being able to correlate all that information together, we can tell a really good story about how that information was exfiltrated.
Now, how does Nuix handle the law enforcement prosecution side? In other words, you have to tell this story in a way that creates probable cause, maybe violates a code section. California has some very strict, what's called personally identifiable information laws. And if I'm going to prove you stole something, there's a burden of proof, right?
Yep.
So what tools do you give the investigator to use that? Because it's not always easy to translate this sort of data into a police report, so to speak.
We do a lot. I mean, we have law enforcement and clients all around the world, including a lot in the States. For us, it's about bubbling up the information so that the investigator can look at the information that's relevant to them very quickly.
Okay.
And it could be a child pornography case. It could be whatever it is. We will extract all of the information that we know that most law enforcement are interested in.
Right.
And by bubbling it up the top, showing it pictorially, and then allowing you to drill into that information very quickly, it allows you to just look at the information you want.
Does that help put it in a presentation format, so to speak, chronologically?
We put it in a variety of different, different ways.
Right.
And our new tools, analytics and intelligence, will also allow you to video it. So you can see how you...
Oh, create a video of your investigation, what you found. Interesting.
Exactly.
All right.
But you'll be able to tag, you'll be able to comment, you'll be able to structure, you'll be able to flag, all of that as you're actually making the investigations as well.
So, in other words, I look at this child pornography evidence, I flag that for the video later.
Exactly.
Oh, interesting.
Or getting back to the USB example, so as you find that there's four different, it's been plugged into four different computers on the network over the last month, you note that in your notes, you flag it, and then you say, you look at who the users are on each of those machines, and you can see, well, there's only one person who's actually used all four of them in the last month. You can put that note down there, make it a tag so you can always go back to that person's name again. And we wrap that up as a package, and then you can use that as your evidence.
So how do you get my friend Paul, who's retired, who does not use Quicken to balance his checkbook? He still uses the statement they mailed to him. He won't participate. Cops are a little behind in these sort of things sometimes, right? Is it a hard sell for Nuix to come into a detective bureau and say, look, here's what we do? Do you get the eyes rolled up in the head saying, wait a minute, that's too complicated? Or are you finding the younger cops now kind of get this computer stuff and they're embracing it?
It's a bit of both. I mean, some agencies around the world absolutely are embracing it hook, line, and sinker.
Right. Because
they have to.
You have to. That's right.
Eventually,
you got to do it.
There was a report that came out of the UK last week that said, you know, computer crime is bigger than every other type of crime added together.
Oh, I bet it is, absolutely.
So you can't ignore 50% of crime anymore. So, yeah, we've crossed that Rubicon. How do we actually make Paul, I'm smiling because Paul Slater is an individual who runs all of our investigation thought leadership. Amazing man, Paul Slater, and you know, it's his job to make sure that the product is as simple to use as possible. I go back to what I said before. So whatever type of case it is, we've had experience of it. You know, we've been doing this now for so long. So it's our job to provide you with the facts that help you make your case.
Yeah.
So,
and the investigators are part of that programming.
Oh, yeah.
Because they know what needs to be programmed. They tell the programmer, program it this way so it looks like this for the cop.
But it's the ability for them to use their intellect beyond that. So let's just say I've provided you with the five credit card numbers that are inside this data set. That might give you the information. Well, then the investigator will say, well, I want to know where else that credit card has been. You know, can you show me which emails that was in? Can you show me who that individual has been talking to before? So it doesn't take away from the need for that investigator to use his noodle. He's got to be able to use his head.
Right.
But it's our job to provide them with the first series of information at his fingertips and then allow him to very simply use his intellect to go from there to finish the
case. That's a good point. I talked to a lot of IT guys, and over the years, they've always told me this. Look, Chuck, you can tell me how to make the computer do something. What I don't get is, how do you know that? In other words, you're programming it to catch a bad guy. I know code, I know that stuff, but I don't know bad guys. It's a different discipline, right? Cops know bad guys. Cops anticipate behavior. They understand that part of it. So this partnership is brilliant, and it needs to happen. It should have happened 15 years ago, but I'm glad to say that you're telling me it's happening more and more. That's important.
Let me give you a really great example. It's happened in L.A. About a year and a bit ago. We went on a ride-along with a three-letter agency, and they it was going to a drug bust.
Right.
The warrant was given anyway, and they went in, and there was a bunch of people inside in the drug house. There was also a bucket full of burner phones, 60 of them. So we plugged them all into our program, took all the information from them.
Oh, excellent.
And we were able to show the timeline of when one phone was dropped and when the next one was brought on.
Fascinating, yeah.
And they had a process that every month they'd get rid of their phone. They just put it in the bucket.
Kept to the right. So you didn't get rid of it, exactly, yeah.
And then on the first day of every month, they'd text the same person. Basically, they'd text their girlfriends what their new telephone number was. this would go on anyway. We were able to show all of the texts, all of the information flows between the drug dealers and their clients over all of the entire period. And because they're all geolocated, we were able to then put it up on a mapping environment and show how it was all located at that house.
Right.
And then, this again is the law enforcement using their knowledge.
Right.
The guy said, can you tell me if there's any other hotspots within 3 to 5 miles from this location?
Oh, right, right.
So he said, okay, cool. We put our fingers in. A couple of seconds later, there was another hotspot. So they got a warrant. They went around to that house and went in, and there was a lady there. And they asked the lady whether she had ever been associated with these individuals and whether she'd ever been back to that particular house. And she said, no, don't know who you're talking about, never been there. So we got her phone, we plugged it in. And God bless us, some of them aren't that clever.
Right.
There was a selfie that she took of her. Guns, drugs, and money in the background. Geotagged back to the last house.
She's like the hub for everybody, yeah.
Well, she was one of their girlfriends.
The girlfriend, yeah.
So there's an example of the law enforcement officer asking the question, the tools did the work, and everybody went to jail.
Eddie, we're out of time. It goes by fast, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Eddie Sheen, Nuix.com.
Nuix.com. We're the people who are behind the Panama Papers. And I can tell you that in the last 3 weeks, we've been involved in at least 3 cases where it was terrorist cells being taken down.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Might be a couple email servers we need to look into eventually, too. See what happens to that. Thanks for coming on Security
Guard. You're talking about.
All right. All right. Welcome to Security Guy Radio at Black Hat 2016. What's your name, sir?
Christian Lees.
Bring your mic a little higher. Okay. And what's the name of your company?
InfoArmor.
I like that name.
Thank you.
It tells me a lot.
Yeah.
Tell me what you do.
Essentially, InfoArmor is a threat intelligence platform. Really, what we utilize is operative and open source intelligence. Our analysts are out in the threat actor space, harvesting and using this data for attribution to protect brands.
Now, what do you think is the biggest threat we have to our security? I know there's a lot of levels, but what's one that stands out to you that you're worried about?
That's an excellent question. I would say general complacency, right? Just being asleep at the wheel and not recognizing the threats that are out there.
Yeah, because, a lot of data breaches now are bring your own device, right?
Certainly, yeah.
I don't want to pay for your cell phone because it's cheaper. That's great.
Right.
But when I go home to watch Game of Thrones, I don't really care about your password at the company. I'm just too busy doing social media,
sure. And
I get hacked, right?
Yeah.
So I understand that most hacks are not because, and Security Guard Radio's brain's a little slow on this.
Right.
It's not because somebody, quote, hacks you.
Right.
As much as they find the encryption key and unlock things. That's one way, right?
Certainly.
Or, give me the term we were talking about before this, how they get it.
Well, certainly there's an opportunity, a large opportunity. There's essentially a treasure trove of data out there for threat actors, right? And that is to leverage off the employee, particularly in the credentials area, right?
Right.
There's a lot of third-party services that are disclosed, data disclosure, and threat actors are pretty good at targeting your employees and leveraging those credentials.
And people get in because more because people are actually authenticated.
Right.
But they shouldn't be.
Sure.
And what's the term for that?
We
just talked about it a minute ago. We're talking about how to...
Sorry, I didn't quite
hear the question. Before the show, we were talking about a term that you use for that.
Compromised credentials?
Compromised credentials, right.
Certainly.
So the guy has a password.
Right.
He's sloppy with it. He loans it to his buddy. The network doesn't know any different and says, well, you're okay. I'm going to let you in.
Right.
And in fact, that's a quasi, it's a breach, but it's a quasi hack, so to speak, right?
Certainly.
Could be a social engineering hack where
sure.
I trick you into all that information, right?
Right. Also, I would say that there is a certain behavior with our employees by using our corporate credentials for other third-party sites. Do you really need to use your corporate credential for a Netflix account, et cetera, or Facebook? Probably not, but that will also enable threat
actors. I wasn't aware of that. Is that a trend?
That is a trend, yeah. We see a lot of corporate credentials that are in use by the threat actors or actually offered in the threat actor space.
Now, is that because they're using it while they're at work, or they use it privately too?
They use it privately, of course, for work, right? You know, commonly, hey, you know, I'm going to sign up for Adobe account.
Yeah.
But we do see a lot of corporate credentials utilized with third-party sites, and typically these are private.
Move your mic just a little closer. Right? There you go. So how does InfoArmor get handle on this and help corporations prevent that?
Right. So essentially, since we're human intelligence driven, right, we're operatively driven, our analysts are out there in the threat actor space monitoring for data disclosures, typically through a domain. We call it domain monitoring. So any of this data that we see within the threat actor space, we can then correlate it to the actual domain itself
now,
or the employees as well.
Do we use... Here's the challenge in security. You have a guard, or let's say a corporate investigator. He's got one level of knowledge in this.
Right.
And then you have the IT guy, who is a different, I'm not going to call it higher, just call it a different level of understanding IT stuff, right?
Certainly.
How does your company help get that down to a level where the actor, in other words, the physical security guy is usually charged with acting and doing something about it.
Right.
You know, let's go get him, let's go find him, let's put him in jail.
Yeah.
Tell me how those things work with InfoArmor.
So essentially, InfoArmor, we have a platform called Vigilante, and these security professionals of an organization would utilize this kind of sophisticated tool. Within this tool, there's a number of mechanisms. So they'll use this for data attribution. They'll log in. They'll set watch lists. Really, InfoArmor is nothing more than an extension of your security platform, right? Traditionally, organizations' security platform, they lead off at the network edge, right? They're really in charge of protecting that perimeter edge.
Right.
We specialize in that outer edge, the untrust area within the threat actor space. By the data we harvest and put it within our pool, the organization can utilize that for attribution and help protect their organization for cyber threats.
Now, how does the compromised credential happen in the first place?
Right.
Are companies choosing one level of authentication? They're not using two or three level authentication?
I mean, yeah.
It seems like it's a no-brainer. So you get your password stolen. Guess what? I need to plug a dongle into step number two, or I got to get a text to my phone.
Right.
Are you finding that's number one reason, because they only have one level of authentication?
Well, there are some organizations that are just really kind of reliant on that traditional username and credential. But there are a lot of organizations that also are advanced, right? They're very sophisticated. They're using multi-factor authentication. And for an organization to say, well, we're not really worried about our employees' credentials out in the wild, could be a mistake, right? Because organizations, individuals are out there sharing their credentials. They now become a leverage point for the threat actor to leverage off. And it is a direct threat to the organization.
So they think they're safe.
Right.
Because they have different levels. But really, they're not, because this problem is not about that. This problem is about, hey, I gave you my credential. I took it off your desk. I found it or whatever. And how do you guard against that, though?
It's really about these credentials being out in the wild and the threat actor being able to associate that individual to the organization, whether it's through social media. Within InfoArmor, we really want to leverage the harvesting of these credentials and deliver that meaningful data to the organization so that they can put in some sort of compensating controls or talk to the individual and educate them that, hey, these credentials, despite the fact that they may not be associated with our domain, they are a direct threat, right? If you're logging into Yahoo, it could impact our organization.
Right.
So it's really about getting that data quickly to them.
Now, does InfoArmor go out and search networks for those things? Is that kind of how it works?
We are out there in the threat actor space looking for credentials, oftentimes through open source intelligence. This could be through Pastebin. It could be through Twitter. We have quite a number of large tools that harvest it. And then also there's the closed forum space that we specialize as well.
So how come I'm not picking on LinkedIn, right?
Yeah.
But LinkedIn gets hacked all the time.
Right.
And I can't figure out why that happens.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of social, what's the term? Social hacking.
Sure.
In other words, oh, hi.
Right.
I'm 20-year-old in a bikini and join my network. No, I don't think so.
Right.
But people fall for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Are you finding that the social media is the place where most of these breaches are happening now, where people are out there, like you say, using their corporate IDs and things like that?
No, I would say it's wide, right? LinkedIn is just a very large example.
Right.
And it's very near and dear to us, right? Especially considering that, it's safe to assume that 50% of people are on LinkedIn, particularly in the corporate world.
So yeah, it's pretty big. It's almost everybody in a way, yeah.
So
the other 50% don't get computers probably, right? But eventually they'll get there, yeah.
Right, yeah. So, I think it's just an example, but the disclosures are widely dispersed across all levels of organization.
What's the next level you guys are working at to get, the next best thing? Don't give any company secrets or anything like that, but...
Right, yeah. We're very focused on our worldwide centers. These are actually out there consuming the reconnaissance efforts of threat actors. We're also building the threat actor library so that individuals...
Oh, interesting.
Right,
okay.
Yeah. So you can look into our platform and recognize the threat actors, what they're capable of, right? It's really kind of going into the who, what, why, when, where, and how. One of our unique factors is the fact that we think most organizations, security organizations, really leverage IP reputation feeds and say, hey, we do cyber. We go much further, and we can really kind of give you the who, what, when, why, where, and how of threat actors. If you have a proof point, we'll go in and investigate it for you.
Now, let's say I'm a Disney, and I'm interested in this product.
Sure.
Sell it to me. Tell me how I'm going to benefit from it. Tell me what you're going to do to help me.
Right, yeah. So Disney, that's an example of a very large organization.
Huge.
Yeah.
135,000 employees worldwide.
Very big attack surface, right?
Right.
So, to be focusing internally on your trust environment and not focused on that untrust environment is a scary thing, right? You want to have that attribution. You want to pick up the threat actor's conversations or kind of chatter about organizations.
Right.
Maybe these threat actors have a vulnerability. Maybe they're looking for something, or maybe they're looking to sell something that's associated with that organization.
Now, this is interesting. You say the non-threat environment, right?
Yeah.
So in access control, I've always believed, which is the opposite of all the models,
sure,
that my first answer to you coming in is no.
Right.
That's not what the model is. The model is, oh, you got a card. It's a yes.
Yeah.
It's a go, go, go. In other words, we each let thousands of people through the door because their card was good.
Right.
But I couldn't see your picture.
Right.
I didn't know the difference, right?
Yeah.
And I was always of the mind to say, no, let me stop, let me talk to you, let me look. And back in the day, that would be multi-layer authentication, or it wasn't, but
right. We
try to use the human element as one level. Right.
Right.
Why are the organizations so focused on green light, go? What I mean,
right.
Your company's solving that other side of it, right?
Right.
Is it just because it's easier, it's logical? What? To me, everybody you can't come on my network, period.
Right.
And you got to go through a lot of steps to get in there. But it seems they just make it password, card, boom.
Right. Well, I think that you actually touched on something interesting, right? The trick to security is not being an impediment to the business, right?
That's true.
Grind it to a halt.
Right.
We as security professionals, we can absolutely implement very strict security rules and make it very difficult for people to do business. Sometimes I think that, the company recognizes, hey, listen, we got to make a living. We got to really have this data access in order to function. So it's, operations really needing a certain level of access.
It's always a trade-off. I mean,
yeah.
I was in a live broadcast facility.
Sure.
And when I put that ID in there in 2000 or 1999, everybody went ballistic. I can't take 30 seconds to swipe my card.
Sure.
Had to retrain the culture for about 6 months.
Right.
Now it's common.
Right.
But you're right. It was a hard sell. And the other thing is people tend to balance the finance part of it with operations.
Right.
And say, it's going to cost $1 million, but we've never been hacked. So you know what? Since we haven't been, I'm not spending $1 million, except that an average breach costs way more than that, right?
Certainly.
Do you think companies are getting to a point where they're getting the cost-benefit analysis and understanding that a major breach can actually shut you down?
Right.
Maybe permanently, depending on PR image, data loss, all that kind of thing.
Right.
Are they getting that and leaning more towards being cautious?
Very good question. Yeah, I think that there's probably examples of all of the above, right? I think there's organizations out there that are underfunding security.
Right.
Thinking it won't happen, or perhaps maybe the brand can endure, depending upon the type of incident. But I think more organizations are really coming around to, hey, listen, it's a dangerous world out there, right? And if we're not out there hunting the hunted and recognizing the threats, then we are susceptible to some sort of incident.
Yeah, I mean, they say it's not a matter of who's been hacked, it's a matter of who's not been hacked. And eventually they're going to say, security guy radio got hacked.
Right.
I put my counter up online about 2 weeks ago, and that same day, I had about 20,000 attacks on my website.
Unbelievable.
Now, if they want to steal my radio show, I'd be glad for them to steal the show and listen to it, right?
Yeah.
And you know, we'll see what I get. But I was just a little bitty nobody company compared to these other things, right?
Right.
And maybe it's because we're at Black Hat. You know, I'm not really sure what it is. But what do you think is behind the psychology of a hacker? My opinion is it's a violent act. Right, and I define violence very low, because if I catch you at the start when you're not trying to kill me, that's the best place to start. But really, you're going to come to my company and take my data and steal my employees' information and ruin a bunch of lives. It's violence, right? Is it they are trying to prove they're smarter than everybody, or I mean, there's something weird behind it that's just not a normal kind of criminal behavior.
Right.
You deal with these guys. What do you think?
Well, I think that the intent behind the threat actors is wide, right?
It's not always financial gain necessarily. They just do it to do it, right?
Right. Well, I think that, you know, there's probably three areas, right? First and foremost, the intent to, you know, turn something into a revenue stream, right? Secondly is the intent to hack for change, right?
Right.
Hacktivism, some sort of political implications.
I actually kind of like hacktivism myself.
Depends
on what side you're on.
Well, it depends upon, and then lastly would be, you know, your intent is to build a name for yourself, right? And,
right.
You know, so I'm the guy and I'm out there and I'm dumping it into open source intelligence saying, check it out, here's what I've done.
So we moved more towards the financial side of it? Because back in the day it was more like the 12-year-old saying, look, I can hack your Pentagon server.
Curiosity.
Right. Curiosity, right.
Yeah.
Now, it's going more into a business model with ransomware and all that kind of stuff.
Right, yeah. You even see ransomware as a service, right? You know, out there, $39. So it's very mature, the entire life cycle of it is. It's to me, the underground economy is a living organism, right?
Right.
And it corrects itself. It overcompensates, right? You see that routinely.
Well, been a fascinating discussion.
Thank you very much.
Name again?
Christian Lee, InfoArmor.
And CEO?
CISO.
CISO, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
And InfoArmor.com?
InfoArmor.com.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Thanks, Chuck.
All right. Beautiful.
It's okay?
Yeah.
You're good.
Okay. Welcome to Security Guy Radio at Black Hat 2016. What's your name?
Thank you. My name is Mandana Jawahiri. I'm with Savius.
And what does Savius do?
Well, Savius has been in business for over 25 years.
Really? 25? No, I have heard of that name. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Well, actually, we changed our name from Wild Packets to Savius a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And the reason was because we were getting into security and we thought it reflects where we are going better. So we changed the name to Savius. We've been expert in network troubleshooting, mostly network visibility and diagnostics.
For basic functionality, that's what you did before.
Yes, that's what we did before,
right.
Purely networking. So providing network visibility and performance diagnostics for our customers. And then a year and a half ago, we applied our expertise in networking into security, and we came up with our first security appliance called Savius Vigil.
Now, it's very interesting because you've been the people that have been monitoring a network for 20 years.
Yes.
That's the nuts and bolts, keeping it up and running. Seems like just a natural switch to go into the security part of it.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
You know how it works.
Yes. Yeah. We know how it works, and also we know how important network is into security investigations, and we complement other products in incident response. So we are not replacing other products that they provide log or host or memory forensics, but we are just adding network forensics into the mix.
Interesting. Now, explain for my nieces and nephews who can't even work a cell phone what forensics means to Savius, because it means a little different thing to different people.
Yes, for sure. So what we do is we capture and store network traffic, which is relevant to security investigations. So the thing is, when you're doing a network forensics, and when we're talking about 20 gig, 40 gig, 100 gig of traffic,
right,
there is no way to store every single packet because it's not practical. It's going to be too expensive.
Right.
And when you want to look for something you're interested in, it's going to take you forever to actually find what you're looking for.
That's a good point. I didn't realize that we're running out of storage is
Yes, running out of the storage, and also the amount of traffic we're talking about is a lot. So if someone wants to find something they're interested in, it's going to take them a long time.
Right.
So we want to make security professionals more efficient by only storing the relevant network data to security alerts that they actually care about and they need to investigate.
Now, define what that means. What would relevant be? Is it defined by the user, by the way? Or in other words, does your client say, this is relevant to me, please save this? Or do you guys have the standard?
So it's kind of both. We integrate with IDS, IPS, or SIM vendors, and they all generate security alerts, as
right.
you know. And each company owns a set of those products. So we basically augment the existing security systems. So we integrate with them all, and they generate alerts. And in real time, while they're generating the alerts, we tap into the same segment of the network, we capture network packets, we capture the security alerts that they're generating, and we correlate and we automate the data collection for those security alerts, and only keep those into the storage for a longer period of time instead of saving every single packet.
Right.
But also the user has the option of saying, well, I want to monitor my credit card server all the time.
Right.
So they can just put an IP address for that server and capture everything. Or I want to look at all my DNS traffic or my FTP traffic. I want to know what people are sending over FTP. So I want to monitor that traffic all the time. So they have the option to actually put those criteria in and just capture the packets for that.
Now, you say you integrate with these other programs that are already on somebody's network.
Mm-hmm.
Why are those other programs doing security? Are they just a very specific function? In other words, there's so many things on a network that, mm-hmm. you know, one guy's capturing logs, one guy's looking at bandwidth, one guy's looking at video, mm-hmm. different products, I mean,
yes.
right? So Savius is able to integrate with all those separate softwares and then pull data out of that to say, hey, listen, this one guy keeps sending out a video every Tuesday at 2:00. That might mean something. Is that a good way to say it?
It might, but the focus is really also on the security alerts that these intrusion detection or prevention systems generate, right? And what we do, we get those alerts and we buffer the entire network traffic for 5 minutes. So when the alerts comes in and highlights, let's say, IP addresses or the time frame that the
right.
alert actually triggered, we go back and look at all the conversations between those two IP addresses or any other IP addresses that they had conversation in that 5 minutes buffer, and we just save those conversation into the storage instead of saving everything. But
it
gives you is not only you would have access to the information from the time that the alert triggered, but also you would have it before the alert triggered, so you know what actually led into that alert.
Right. So the data is, when it says it's being buffered, like on the radio show, I buffer the broadcast. So if somebody mm-hmm. says a bad word, I push the button and it doesn't go out. This is a little different. In other words, you're not slowing the traffic down.
No.
You're just, not the actual traffic, but you're capturing and slowing down a view of it.
Yes.
Right? So,
yes.
So I can
yes.
now I say, listen, I see this view in slow motion. Now I can do something to respond.
Yes. So
okay.
So the idea is, these security systems, they generate a lot of alerts, right?
Right.
So and But in reality, the security professionals, they can't really look at every single alert.
No, it's billions of things.
Yeah, too many of them, right? And we know every single alert that you don't investigate, it can eventually become a breach, even if the severity is low.
Right.
We saw it in the Target, for example,
Right. Yeah.
Because FireEye actually triggered the alert, but the severity was low, and they didn't investigate it, right? So what happens is, in our case, we automate that network data collection. So it's much easier for the security professional to go and investigate them instead of going and finding the packet for every single alert and then investigate, right?
Right.
So we just make them more efficient. And also, when the breach happened, if it happens, which we know it does, a lot of times the actual attack starts months ago. Like we were talking
That's
about
right.
3 months,
somebody
6 months
told me about
ago,
that. Right.
So another advantage of our solution is because we don't capture every single packet, just the relevant packets, we can give you packets from 6 months ago or even a year ago that you would need for investigating a security breach.
Now, what if a packet you don't capture winds up to be a threat? Is that a possibility?
Yes, that's a possibility, but again, because of the number of alerts you're getting per second, the chance of us having some network data around that security breach is still pretty high.
Oh, in other words, you might have a part of a multiple chain.
Exactly.
That makes sense, yeah.
Let's say because it was a zero-day attack,
right?
So you don't have an alert. But because you had many other alerts in that time period, the chance of having some network traffic, it's still pretty high.
Now, can the user, the client, do anything to configure this? In other words, say, listen, Savius, I just want this thing over here. I don't really care about people stealing my email. I don't care about stealing videos. I care about, you know, this directory over here that has all my... It has the recipe for Coca-Cola in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that.
Yes.
So can you go down to that narrow view, or does it have to be a wide net?
No. We can, user can filter out the traffic they want to capture.
Okay.
They can say, okay, exclude all these traffic I don't care about.
Right.
And only capture these traffic. And also even on the alerts, they can say, I only care about this security alerts at this level of severity, don't capture everything else. So user has complete control and flexibility on what they like to capture and not.
So the reason I bring that up, it's funny, but my website wasn't hacked, because hacks means they won, right? That means
mm-hmm.
they got in.
Yes.
But they tried to get in 20,000 times,
yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And my little radio shows, nothing to hack, right? If you want to steal my shows and listen to them, please do, right? But what made me think about your product was, let's say I was a big organization and I'm getting hundreds and hundreds of different types of attacks from places, but all I care about is that guy last week that was in France.
Mm-hmm.
That's who he was in France somewhere, we know.
Yes.
And I would want to turn off everything else because I want to catch this guy.
Yes.
And anything related to that guy is mm-hmm. all I want to see. Can
yes.
I filter out all those other things and just look at one attack
yes.
and monitor it?
Yes.
Okay, good.
So that's basically putting an IP address, even range from France, even if you don't know that specific IP
address. That's right. Maybe there's a range,
yes,
right?
You can okay. put a range in, and that's all you monitor. You don't have to monitor everything.
And I'm not going to compromise my network totally because that data is still coming in. Maybe I have to go back in an archive and find it. Now,
yes.
Do you create – I know you can't save everything, but do you create – some kind of an archive. So let's say I filtered everybody except the guy going off my website. In the background, are you still capturing the other packets?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
So it's constantly capturing.
Right.
And we are passive, so we don't have any impact on your network.
Good. Doesn't slow anything down?
Nothing.
Right.
Yes.
Is there anything going on in the world of legislation where the government's trying to butt their nose into these things and say you can or can't do something?
Well, that's interesting you mentioned that because we were in Munich for our partner conference a couple of months ago, and we realized how privacy is important, for example, for
it's different
the German,
in every company. Oh,
yeah. Especially we learned that Germany has the most strict law that you cannot keep information, packet network information, for more than 30 days.
Yeah, so it's crazy.
It's crazy. And one of the promises of our product is that you need to actually be able to keep the information for 6 months, for a year, because a lot of the time breaches, they actually get initiated long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
So we were trying to have this argument with them that our product doesn't actually capture everything, just captures right. what really matters for the security professionals, right?
What did they say, 9?
Well, yes, 9 exactly. but what they say is, well, true, but still what you're capturing is people's privacy and private right. information. But the thing is, what about when you get hacked, when you get breached,
right?
Right? Then all that information is in the hand of the bad guys. Which
That's
one
right.
do you prefer? For you to have it or for, you know, for someone to steal the information?
Now, can you work around that by saying, we're saving it on a server in Burbank? Or does it, because in other words, if you're not saving yeah. it in country,
yes.
does it matter? I don't know.
Well, I don't think it matters, but actually I take it back, because it's when you use it.
Oh, I see.
You know, so you can't really use the information.
So the guy in Germany couldn't log into Burbank
yes,
and get...
Right. Yes, so maybe if they hire someone in the U.S. to do the investigation well, for
yeah.
them and report to them, maybe that works. But you know, we are also working on re-encrypting the data ourselves
right.
afterwards, because one of the problems is when you decrypt, and you don't want to, of course, save the data decrypted. You want to be able to encrypt it for security purposes. But then if you don't decrypt, which would be fine for our product because we can still save it.
That's right.
But then later on when they want to investigate, the keys are actually gone. The certificates
That's
expired.
Right.
So how people would be able to do that? So we have a lot of work going
These
on.
These are tricky challenges. In California, we have yeah. a lot of strict PII law, personally mm-hmm. identifiable information.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a breach, it can cost you up to, I think it's $1,500 per person.
Yes.
So Target, you know, if they got 1 million customers, that's a lot of dough.
Yes.
In California, you're going to get fined.
Yes, for sure.
And they do the same thing. They say, you can't use certain data a certain way. Not as strictive as Germany.
Yes.
But I was talking to Cisco a couple weeks ago, same kind of challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Some countries don't let you capture video.
No.
Well, mm-hmm. I want a picture of the terrorist. No, can't do it.
Yes.
I think they're all going to wake up pretty soon and
well,
say, we got
to
do it.
They yeah. need to. Like, yeah.
So yeah. It's got to be a
no
balance.
Way, no, yes,
and I'm not
exactly.
for Big Brother, obviously.
Yes, of course.
But
yeah.
I'm for a little bit of Big Brother. Got to be some balance in that.
Yes,
you know.
Yes, for sure.
Well, give us your name one more time.
Mandana Javahari.
And the company website?
Savius.com.
Thanks for coming on Security Guerrilla.
Thank
a really
you
good
so
conversation.
Much. Uh-huh.
Thanks.
Thank you.